Nancy O'Dell interviewing Mr. Merrill Stratton on March 22, 2001 at the Westboro Public Library. Mr. Stratton, where and when were you born?
I was born in Hocken, Mass., named Mount Auburn Street.
How long have you lived in Westboro, and or when did you move to Westboro?
I moved to Westboro.
And where did you live at that time?
On Broad Street.
Okay, and do you live at a different address now?
Yes. I live in Bowman Lane.
Do you have any siblings?
No.
No, so none of them served,
no.
Right? What can you tell us about your town before the Korean War?
A small New England town.
Do you know what the population was back then?
Probably around 1,300.
So was it comparable to Westboro or smaller?
It was smaller.
Smaller.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a bit.
What effect that you can see did the war have on your town?
Outside of the families whose family members served in the war, radio and newspaper broadcasting of that type. The war was not causing any ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Did you visit home during your leave?
Yes. 130-day leave between basic training and final destination to Korea, November 14th to December 14th, 1951.
Did you write and receive letters and cards from home during your service?
Yes. Letters from home, some friends, buddies, and a couple of girlfriends that I've known going to work in service.
Did, this isn't on here, but did they have a town newspaper? Did they send you a copy just to tell you what was going on?
No, there was no town newspaper.
No town newspaper. So you didn't get like a Worcester paper or a Westboro paper?
No.
Did you get a sense of what was going on at home during this time through the letters or through papers or reports or?
Yeah, it was pretty quiet.
Were you married before, during, or after the war?
After the war.
Do you have children?
No.
So now about your military memories and service. What was life, what was your life situation at the time you entered the service?
I worked for Ranger Corporation, Waverly Street, Birmingham, Mass. It was a paper manufacturing industry. And before enlisting in the Royal Army,
So at that time they had the draft, right?
Yeah, they had a draft, but I figured that there's, at that time, to produce people to enlist voluntarily, they had a 24-year enlistment, a 24-month enlistment. And because the services needed manpower and replacements, the attrition rate in Korea was so high that they needed manpower right away. And they offered the 24 enlistment. I enlisted July 14, 1951, and to 1953.
So do you think if you didn't volunteer, you would have been drafted?
Yes.
And what was the term if you were drafted longer?
24.
In which branch of the military did you serve?
I served in the Army.
What was your rank on separation from active duty?
Staff Sergeant, temporary.
And how did you get into the particular service that you found yourself in, rather than like the Navy or the Air Force or? You wanted to be in the Army?
Yeah. Well, I tried to get in the Navy about 3 times. They said I had high blood pressure. Every time I came back, see my doctor in town, blood pressure was okay. So I was like young fellow was driving in a Boston, of course, and the blood pressure would be up, and they'd take it, and they'd say you get plunked. So finally they said, why don't you go down and the Army needs men, go down and see the recruiting sergeant down there. So the Army took me, and they didn't even have any blood pressure in their case.
Did they do the same exam and you passed?
Yeah. They just did the blood pressure thing because I had all the other things in the Navy. Because my father was in the Navy and my brother was in the Navy, so I wanted to go in the Navy. But, I could have gone in the Navy because and after this 3 times being found with a higher than normal blood pressure by the doctor, they sent me to the pay officer and he said, well, if you want, I waive the, waive you in. And he said, but at that time, I was so fed up, I said, I won't say the word, but, if you think I'm a, because he said, you might be in a predicament. He said, and I'm your shipmate, endangering your shipmate, because you're in a state, say, a gun mount. He said, your high blood pressure might be jeopardizing their lives. But he said, if you really want to go in, I said, I'll pass you.
I'll go to the Army, they'll take me.
Yeah.
What was the reaction of your family and friends when you went to the service?
Well, they figured it was, I had to go anyway one time, so in order to get the service behind me, go get done with and do it.
So you knew you had to go?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How long was your service obligation?
24 months.
4 months.
2 years.
Mm-hmm. Where did you do your basic training?
Well, I did it in Camp Chaffee, Arkansas. Down across the Mississippi. Not far from Texas. Southwest.
Can you describe training camp?
Well, it was a large reservation, we call miles and miles, how many miles in compass. Cut up in various sections for camp, barracks, movie theaters, service clubs, mess halls, Army administration, post office, shipping and receiving areas, but mostly they were wooden barracks, double story, and they held probably a platoon of men, which is 32 4 squads, eight men, 32 men. So 35 men they would hold the barracks.
In one barracks?
Yeah, and the companies had 3 barracks. So they had many, many, many companies. And then they had fields where we had training problems, field problems, like getting run over with a tank, digging buckets, digging the buckholes, and grenade throwing areas. And also with an artillery base, we trained on 105s, and we had fire missions, and we'd go out miles in the reservation, out in the lonely areas, and fire missions with their guns.
So you had thousands of people there?
Oh, yeah.
Men,
yeah,
women?
Yeah. Mostly recruits, men.
Men.
They had administrative women, probably. But mostly we were doing the sergeants.
Yeah.
There were, some were older, and we had some older military recruits known that had different jobs at the base, right? Your sergeants, staff sergeants, 35 years, 40 years old, 45 years old.
Coming back in or regular military?
No, they were lifetimes.
Can you describe some of the people you trained with? Do you remember anybody?
We had one of them was in mid-range, it probably worked. We ran from 20, about 18 to probably 23, 24 years of age. And some of the cadres, which they call the men that were training us, were all there. But mostly the young. And since the Korean War was an integrated war, where they mixed the black and the white, that we had a lot of, what's now black, it's called colored then, mm-hmm. Negroes. So, they had a mixture of
multi-ethnic.
Yeah, right. Italian, you know, Romanians, Lithuanians, Greeks, Irish, English, Germans.
Everything.
Yeah.
Did you stay friends with any of these people, or you all went to different places?
No, just, we're friends with their associates, more or less. And really, friendships developed. They did develop, but during training, they all knew. And just your friends while you're there, you're so good, and you don't keep track of anybody else. You don't really think that really you're going to want to find them out sometime, you know. That was a thing, you know. There comes a day, like a lot of buddies are doing now, they want to look back and find the fellows that served with and your friends with, you know, at that time, associates with, and they often wonder what happened and so forth. And they lost track because the Army discouraged them keeping any records. In combat area, you know. So nobody really thought because you didn't know if you were going to come back, really, you know.
So did they not want
you? Came back and regretted that you didn't do it,
right,
know?
Right. Yeah. They didn't want you to keep this information on you.
No, they didn't. They didn't encourage it. Mm-hmm. Not so much in the stateside, but in the combat area, yeah.
What was a typical day like during basic training?
Well, you get up very early, about 5 o'clock early. And to 5:30, you had to get dressed, washed, shaved, whatever. And they had muster, as it's called, falling out, standing for roll call at 5:30. Then you're going to a half hour PT, that's till 6 o'clock for the training. Mm-hmm. And then 6 o'clock is chow, you know, the breakfast. Then after breakfast, and then after breakfast. And then you roll on your daily routine of classes. Medical aid bandage in school, and medical aid in school, and you like Red Cross training, of course, wounds and everything, you know. How to acquire weapons, different weapons, zeroing them in, because if the weapon is zeroing, you can't hit anything with it. Right? You never make maximum, you never get even a place to get out of those places, you know. You have to keep you up all night and day to get it, and if it's zeroing, you never hit anything. So, you know, that kind of thing. And then that's till 5, and then you get ready for chow, and then after that you have time off. But you don't have a pass, you have to stay up on the base. You make it on the PX, you know, go down and have the beer garden, and 3.2 beer, you know, like water. And so you make action, you have a little bit of it. And then, yes, you know, you could get sandwiches, cold.
So it was a long day.
Yeah, that 10 o'clock was
lights out.
Lights out, yeah.
Did you become a marksman?
Yes.
You did?
Yeah, qualified. Mm-hmm. Yeah, M1 rank. Two, cabin.
After basic training, what additional specialized training did you have?
Well, I had training at, after basic training, to get to where we're going over the career. In Japan, I went to medical aid school, you know, and so forth. They needed medical aid men because they were suffering nutrition. They were tired of them, and they had been killed off. You know, that's the one they were trying to get at a lot of times, and trying to go out and rescue them. can. So it ties up manpower. But medical training in Shinnyama Barracks, you know, Osaka, Japan, about 30 miles south of Osaka. And trained there for, I think, was about 8 weeks. And then went over to Korea, trained the 5th, got a Kojudo. And then we trained down there for patrols. Intelligence Recon Patrol, and headquarters come in, which I was part of, a driver observant. I mean, he's a driver, you get to make maps and so forth, and say, you know, what's the enemy, and all that stuff. And make patrols on jeeps, and fighting the ideas of the service in the infantry.
So that was your first duty assignment?
Yeah, well, the first duty assignment, real duty, active duty assignment, was Pusan, and I was assigned to go and guide a water tower. They picked me up about 5 in the morning on a jeep, way up a ruddy road, right up in the hills, and this sand pipe, ride the water tower, like you see in Westville, that was right there, on the hill over by Pusan. That was where we could go guide it, to guide it, fresh water. So the jeep driver left me off, gone was just before dawn. And I stayed there until 12 o'clock until I was relieved by the jeep.
Alone?
Yeah. Walked around from the tower, or the tank, I should say. Water tank.
So the purpose was to not let anybody poison the supply?
Right, yeah. Anyway, they have the idea in the camps, barracks, right, in the area. It's to observe the company property.
Just to make sure nothing's going on.
Happen.
So what was that like, being out there?
Pretty quiet.
In the tank.
Pretty quiet, wondering what, you wonder, you're in Korea, what's going to be, how it's going to be. It's kind of a sensuous thing.
Mm-hmm. A lot of reflecting time.
Yeah, right.
You get solitary.
It's kind of a lot of things you really notice. You notice the deep water, how it sounds. Which are off the end over the next hill, which is where.
Right. But you didn't know that.
No.
Right. So when you were out there, you didn't bring a snack?
I would have. I should have. But I didn't. Of course, we didn't have the mess hall handy,
Who were some of the people you worked with over there?
Who were some of them?
Anybody?
Down here? Oh, yeah. Well, the master sergeant, staff sergeant, lieutenants, majors, corporal, private, criminal colors, mostly white Southern boys, Tennessee, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, New York, Illinois, California, Maryland. They're all
cross-section
of boys. Young, mostly young, the older race.
So you were stationed in this area in Korea for how long?
I was only there for about a year.
You were in the same spot?
Well, we were in the same outfit, but we moved from, when I joined up there in Kojuro, Iowa, in the prison camp, about 30 miles south of Busan. And then I got injured in a jeep. Korean ran into me, so I was spent time in the hospital. Meanwhile, the outfit moved up to, by LST, they went up to the west coast of Korea, they went up, probably get discharged from Seoul, and Seoul and trucked up to Final Central.
Did you go with them? You didn't go with them?
No, because I was hurt. I was in the hospital. We were just going down to check on the jeep equipment, because they're going to load it on the LST to move it out. And when I was hit my leg, I remained in the hospital for a week.
So when you came out, they were gone?
Yeah.
Right. You joined another group?
I was going to join them, but I had to go, they call it the pipeline, which is front of the field, to where we out there.
Through channels, or they get you there somehow?
Yeah, they have, get all your gear, and throw up the jeep, and take it down, and then get the boat.
did you ever meet up with them?
Huh?
Did you ever meet up with them?
Oh, yeah, on Sunday. Yeah. Watching them about July, I get work.
So it took you how long to get there?
Maybe 3 weeks or so. 3 weeks, yeah. By the time I left the hospital, I finally arrived.
Where and when did you see battle, and you can share, can you share what it was like for you?
Well, I was up in the, as being an observer in the observation post, in the regimental observation post at the top of the high hill, and top of the high hill, and the battalions down below us, they also had an observation post. We were watching the Chinese to see if they can launch their guns. They were firing, you know, because they were firing artillery rounds across the at us. Because the wall was static then, it was all in trenches, like First World War trenches, using the bunkers and so forth. And they would push, you know, they had real battles, but I never saw any of the real horrendous stuff, but we did, as we talked about, the Chinese mortar was antagonizing us like that, and we caught the flash and the dust and the fire. It was on a little island in the river, but in between both our lines, we were about 20 miles apart again.
So you could watch all this from your point.
Huh?
You watched all this.
Yeah. So we had the coordinates in the map. We watched the flash of the mortar. And by location of the land characteristic, the island and so forth, the location of the river, you look on the squared map coordinates of those lines that divide the map with the numbers on it, north, south, west, and so forth. And in a certain sector, there's 40 degrees longitude, 30 degrees latitude, you're in that sector. And then you can divide it in a certain line and you can pinpoint the object you're after. I never had any trouble with them again. And we formed some patrols, one of our two patrols a night to get to prisoner. We set up patrols, one in front of the base, line.
So you did catch
main
prisoners?
Main line of resistance, they call it, huh?
You did catch prisoners? No.
In contact.
But all this time you were above the 38th parallel.
Yeah, because that's where when they stop the offensive of the Chinese fighting and turning back to Chinese, the line wasn't right straight across the 38th parallel. It was ragged because the territory that we held, we kept. So in some cases in the west sector, we were above the 38th as holding down that territory. And the Chinese, there was a point to why they named a certain line, I can't remember exactly, but they called it the some line in Korea, because that line, I think it was a mission line, it was an airport mission line, that line was running through the United States, which they call like the Alabama line, right, where they got the name, well, they called it the Alabama line because of the United States, that parallel or that coordinate was on the Alabama line. That's what they call the operation, the Alabama line over Korea. You know? That's the, it's not the name of it, that's not the name of it, the officer service administration.
Right.
I forget the name of it. I got one to myself, I just agree with it.
At the time, did you know what you were fighting for?
Yep, we did. No problem. You betcha. There was no confusion. They had to kind of work on us. Yeah. Well, we were fighting against the Chinese Communist forces in Korea, the North Korean Army, military, and North Korean Armed Forces. Any Russian or other satellite communist nation who serves to better the government, the armed forces of North Korea. Any communist dedicated to overthrow the United States and constitute government of the United States of America by force.
So you knew who the enemy was.
Oh, yeah.
So you knew that before you went over?
Oh, yeah.
Or
oh, yeah.
So you knew that right up front,
right.
The American people
that,
knew that?
Yeah.
Have you maintained
I'll
contact?
I'll give an illustration of why. When we went out of Camp Chappie, Arkansas, when we got off the train, we had to go into orientation, welcoming by the general of the camp, of the Camp Chaffee. And they found a long troop train. And they found everybody in the auditorium, the theater, the guys there. And the general came on, General Ruffner, David Ruffner, he just got back from the German occupation. And he made the main speech, and he said, well, we like the patent movie, right? There's only one purpose you're here for, and that's to kill the enemy. You're not here to do any projects or whatever, you know, other than you're going to kill the enemy. That's your main purpose is. But be no mistake about it. Well, we knew we'd have all kinds of problems. Before the war started, they were slipping across, doing like they do, that's how they operate. You know, practicing, jamming them in there. We were sleeping bags, because we let the guard down. You're not supposed to be sleeping in sleeping bags. They went to this, and they sent these innocent leopards across the line. Before we even got in the fight. Because we had a criminal from in the high school, before we graduated. 49, and he said, the papers kept saying, we don't know what's going on. He said, he comes, it might be a war for you. He said, it's going to be a war for you. I'm telling you. And he said, the way the things are going now, is the dad's staying on, and there's going to be a war in front of me. So, make no mistake. And he told us what was happening over there. I had buddies that went over, young fellows in the Marine Corps. They were up for children by the war in the Army. They were taking them all away. They weren't our friends.
Have you made contact with any of these people?
No, I haven't, because I lost their addresses. We never kept their addresses. So I often looked at there's different ages of them. We'll look for you for 25 or $25. But I have never engaged now. I keep looking. Because I belong to several service organizations. And in the Legion, the DW, I've never come across Ned and the Korean War Veterans Association that I belong to. Never, I look at the membership of those two members, and I only came across one name that I knew. And I drove from, the name of Lieutenant Yoda, Harry Yoda. So, and as it was, I wrote to him, and I saw his name in there. Membership list of the TIP RCT. So I called him. I dropped the card and he wrote back to me. I asked him, are you the lieutenant I drove for in Korea? Headquarters company. He said, yes, I am. Yeah. That's the one I'm driving. And let me know. He wrote that. And he went on to get out of the ad as a colonel. And been the Pentagon a couple times during me all over from Japan, back to Korea, I think in Korea 3 times. And he went to the as a colonel. And then about 3 years ago, I got the news he was killed down in Florida, just up far from home. Auto accident.
Well, he went through all that? And
yeah. He'd been married about 3 times.
So he was a Korean man?
Career
in the military.
He was the colonel of the TIP and staff, at the top echelon administrative. He said if he stayed in the South for one more week, he was second lieutenant. He said if he remained in that arrow for one more week, he would have caught my stroke.
Everybody.
He's kind of a swinger.
And then he stayed 20 years, right?
He said. He, I picked him up, they would get a call, he put a request for a Jeep, right, in the motor pool. And the motor pool housed all the Jeeps and everything, all the drivers, and they had dispatchers. And he'd hand off the trip, he'd be on call that day, right? of the day. You get a call, take this officer down to, or whoever down to, 2nd Battalion, right? First Company, 2nd Battalion, or 3rd, whatever. Or down to the Ordnance Company, or down to the Medic Company. So he came out, I picked him up, and I'm sitting in the Jeep. He slung his body in the Jeep, you know, leg out over the front fender. Okay, sir, so let's go. And he was going along, this was a radio Jeep, you know. He said, get some moves on that goddamn thing, will you?
Was he young, too?
Yeah, he was young, so I was thinking kind of just better. OCS or, you know. Yeah, he looked like a as he got older. So he had kind of a strong jaw, but he was kind of a dude, you know.
Did you see him after?
They wanted to make it a quarterback.
Did you see him?
On his hip.
When you were communicating with him, did you see him after? No. You just communicated through writing.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But you never did meet.
He was at the reunion breakfast. He asked me what I did. And I got good letters.
That was good.
One time I took him up on the hill. I called to take him up to look at our OP up on the hill to the line. And so we got on the Jeep and went up there. He said, leave me up here. The roads cut in the mountains, right? And there's the protection from the gunners on the outside, the Chinese, and waters or whatever. So, then I'm going in, he said, wait here. He said, go in and take a look at the bunker where they have our instruments, you know, periscopes and all that. So I'm waiting. What's happening? What's happening? So he had to travel. Trench right to the bunker. I don't know, like a ton of land. And sometimes it was very low. I mean, it was only about 3 feet deep, 4 feet deep. It should have been 5 or 6, you know. So you had to go along and crouch, right? Because it's all open. The Chinese could see you moving, right? So you try to keep it pretty low as you're going up. I'm going along, my head down, and my eyes are coming in, my helmet rip, and I see a pair of eyes looking at me. I see a second lieutenant bar on his helmet, right? It's him. He's coming back. And geez, they're blowing the hell out of this place. Let's get the hell out of here.
Can you turn around in there?
No. Well, yeah, you had to. You squeeze around. You know. There you go.
Would you recommend military service to young people today?
Yes,
you would, and why?
It's good life. It's a lot of discipline. It makes you stand on your own 2 feet. Responsibility. They don't promote a lot of drinking or the life that some do take, you know, wild life. Even basically, you had to go to chapel, the night chapel, and schedule and everything else.
So that was part of your routine?
And they also said never do anything you wouldn't be ashamed to do. Never do anything. Reflect on your uniform, your country, or never do anything that you wouldn't do for your sister.
But they promoted the values.
Yes, healthy, you know, good food. You know, use the brain, use the
exercise,
the muscles. You know, and it's a rewarding life if you want to make a career. Plus, it has dangers, of course. You know, but if you want to make the military. And want to promote, you can promote pretty good.
Do you feel that your war experience changed your life, and if yes, how?
Well, yeah, but maybe you can grow up faster. In civilian life, you can't control what you do. You have to, like, this kind of war situation, you know, you have things thrown at you, you can't contemplate, you can't control, and you have to either succumb to it or you master it. learn the situation the way you put it in here.
How old were you when you were 18, right out of high school?
I was born in 1930. So I'm 51, so 21. That's how I figured it out.
Even numbers.
Yeah.
So, but a lot of others were like 18,
19. 18, yeah.
Young.
Yeah.
Really young.
Vietnam, they were younger. Greater than the average. I think the average in World War II was 24, 26. The average is greater than 24. The average is 20.
Mm-hmm. Did you run into people that had served in World War II?
Yes, yeah.
So when they would, when they get out of World War II, they probably were in active reserve or something, and then they called them up again?
Yeah, they get out. At the time, we had to sort of like, the career men, no. You have 24 enlistment, or you're drafted, you come out with, you have to serve 8 years in reserve, inactive or active. Inactive, they put your number in a pool and you're assigned to a certain, like I was assigned to the Hudson to a base, an Army National Guard unit in Hudson, Milford, or the sector of the First Army. So your name goes in that pool over there. And if you're inactive, you're owed 10 units. Once a month, once a week, whatever it is. They have the meeting scheduled. You're active. You attend the meetings, and you get paid for it. Okay. But in that reserve, you're just given that unit, and then you're found if they need you. That's where they select from, and you have to report to that unit. And your reserve is still on the rolls. Then after 8 years, you're completely discharged. Now, if you're in the active reserve, the inactive doesn't qualify. But I think on your military service record, I think you're 2 years, and you went 8 years active. That's guaranteed 10 years. That gives credit.
So
credit for your Army, that you probably have 2 years, maybe you may get kind of 7 years, right? 5 of the 10, actually. You weren't really in the Army. You weren't in the Army, part of the Army units, but you were in the active reserve. So they may give you half that term of 5 year service, record as qualifying service record. But the other thing about the inactive is when I talked to Bob Innes, and he said he was in there. He used to go to the reserves, active reserves, and he had the meetings and so on. And he was in there one time. He was in this at this meeting, and they had this teletype machine working on and clicking on it. And during wartime. Clacking away, so he asked the sergeant to keep that distracted and listen to the speaker. And so after they had their break, he went over to the sergeant there and in charge of them. He says, that thing is very distracting. I said, what exactly are you doing? So the sergeant said, well, he said, how do people, it's keeping all these files, records, and these are coming through on the teletype as requiring they need a captain or they need a major or they need a lieutenant or somebody, corporal, somebody, sergeant, whatever, on the teletype. That's the request we get. And I said, well, how do you fill those requests? He said, I'll show you. He said, so we went over academy. He said, these are the files. And we run files. And he says, there's actives and inactives. The actives, the inactives are at the back of the file. And he said, we need a captain or a major or someone. The inactives are where we go.
I bet the people didn't know that.
Because he said a lot of them don't attend the meetings. You know Bob, right? A lot of them don't attend the meetings. He said, I made sure that I attended all the meetings. That's where we pull them, first to go.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's up to them.
Yeah.
You know, Bob. I attended all the meetings.
What was life like when you returned home?
Well, it was different when I left.
So you didn't really notice?
I mean, it's growing a little bit.
You had matured, but everybody else?
Yeah, no, just it changed, you know, it changed. My family's the same, you know. My buddies are all the same. Maybe 2 years, that's not going to change in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so Tony Hopkins didn't change for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. So it was still a small community?
Yeah.
So the war didn't have any effect?
No. I mean, you're willing, like the guy said, you know. Mm-hmm. Where you been?
Probably when you signed up, you went.
Huh?
When you signed up, you went.
Yeah,
in
fact, they didn't have any band plus parades or whatever. You know, six people are going on. You know, everybody went piecemeal.
Yeah.
Gee, I didn't know you were gone, you know.
Yeah, so you weren't received warmly by your community because they didn't even realize.
I was not really receiving, you know. Did I put out that I was received warmly?
No, I was hoping that you would be.
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they didn't know you really, didn't miss you really, you know. I think about 10 years, so probably. Everybody had their own to look out for them. Only the ones that had people in there, you know, in the service.
Kept up to date.
Yeah, that wouldn't, we didn't have a great deal of stuff.
What did you do after you left the service?
Well, I worked for a while. Before the service, I worked for Western Ministries. And, an angel corporation.
Mm-hmm.
But then when I come back, I didn't want to work in third row. So I eventually worked for General Motors to bring it on the incoming drop, we call it receiving. So we opened up box cars, you know, body parts and cars, you know. And I worked there for a year after the fifth grade. And then I decided I'd use my GI Bill. Maybe something I didn't want to do. So I always kind of like to draw and all that, so I went to Aspen to do it. And graduate diploma, 3 years, special judge for the last part, St. Paul Street, Boston that day. And then 3 years there, commercial art. I wanted illustration, but they didn't have an illustrated course, so I took commercial art and, anyway, I get the phone and got in there. Lasted around a while doing odd jobs. Did a couple of jobs in the I find, but not much. Then I went to work. My brother said, why don't you come down to Fenwald? He's a boss at Fenwald, down the machine shop. So he said, I could just for the summer, you know, I could so I went down there for the first date. About 37 years, got my wife, get married. And then we moved to National Cougar on SC Street. Her kids, her folks, needed a place. We needed a place to live together. Bought a place on Polk Street. And then after Betty's mother died, Betty Boyd, after her mother died, and her aunt died, and her father died, after her father died, her aunt died and her father died, and then, so the mother was alone. So, the house is too big, you know. And so we decided to look for a small place. We moved up to Bowman Lake. The mother was up there for a while, for 3 or 4 years, and she passed on. That's where we lived there.
So how long have you lived there now?
Probably about 18 years. Mm-hmm. After 12 years.
That was like going to the country, right?
Yeah.
It's not country anymore.
No,
so you've seen big changes here.
Yeah.
So you've been in Westboro quite some time.
Yeah. Right.
So you've seen the population increase.
Oh, yeah.
Going up to Bowman, it was like country at that time.
Right.
All behind you there was all fields,
the
Raymond Roy's farm. Now it's all houses.
That's right.
So you've seen a lot of change in Westboro.
Yeah. Biggest change I've seen is the old mill gone.
Mm-hmm. Which one?
Piccadilly Mill.
Well, that's all houses, I think.
The cabin's gone. Cobra Stanley. That's what you appreciate in the hospital.
I appreciate history.
No, I know you. Yeah.
Yeah. But, a lot of people still appreciate.
It shouldn't have happened. It's kind of, you know.
It's hard. Yeah. It's a, I mean, it's, people think progress, you don't have to pay attention to history. But I think you have to know where you came from to know where you're going.
Yeah.
And people don't stay. It's a great town.
Yeah, yeah.
People don't stay there, passing through.
Yeah, right, that's a problem. Yeah. People there that make things when they go to town meeting, they're just saying, oh my God.
What one lesson do you think we should learn from remembering the Korean War?
Well, the people did. Well, it says, trust and verify. Trust after verification. Yeah, don't take them as like us, you know. I mean, they're doing it in the world, but they did it. That's one of the hot spots in the world. They've settled it after all these years. They're not like us. The East, the West, and the West. And the old saying, I don't care. East is East, and West is West, and between them and East, that's for sure. So, because they, I don't care. I've worked with Chinese, nice people. In the village when they had down Wilson. Nice people. Christmas presents, eat Christmas, right to the fire. But there's as long as a certain, they're separate. Not that you want to be in with everybody, but there's a wall there that you'll never get by. They're good. In this case, they brought them. They need something from the fire. But there's still a wall that you can have people that they're different. They're different. And they tried. The white and the black are easy. That's nothing. Because you're so similar, same. You know what I'm saying? Same locale or same culture, more or less, right? They're similar. The blacks are similar here. So the cultures are similar, right? But the East and the West is not. The culture is totally different. The people are totally different. I haven't lived very much. I have a clean body. Bill Maher, I've been to Pure Country meetings in the Middle Ages. And when the North Koreans were asking for food, the United States were contemplating sending them food. So the guy said to Bill, he asked, what do you think, Bill? I said, sad. Because what they did to us over there, and they had no cause to do. If you really trust them, you might as well trust the snake. You got to trust the snake more. Right? The government. I don't mean the people. The government said you can't do business unless you know that you're going to have the upper hand. That's the only thing they know. They're in enormous power and strength. Like I said, it's a man's habit to Congress. Only know deal from power and strength. You can't do it otherwise. They walk out of you. They'll own you. And they don't change. I don't care.
Well, 50 years later, we still have North and South Korea,
that's right.
So it's still
that's right.
Standstill, maybe.
Right. And yet we had, like, Kim Il-sung, who was the one leader of this thing, you know. And Then his son took over, you know, Ubisoft. He's the young playboy, supposedly, but that's not a movie. And then, of course, we're not running our own show because when President Bush went over there, Nevada, he visited North Korea and had a meeting with Kim Il-sung. When he came back, Kim Il-sung died. Did they put in a little bamboo in his rice dish? Shame of the bamboo. Yeah. Like I say, there's a lot of things we don't know what's going on. But this could cause the world to progress.
Well, Mr. Stratton, thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing your memories with us. This has been an oral history tape interview with Mr. Merrill Stratton at the Westboro Public Library on March 22, 2001. This is Nancy O'Dell reporting.